Good morning, Council. The court has previously, for purposes of oral argument only, realigned the parties to have the appellants and cross-appellant argue and divide 15 minutes of time, and the respective other remaining appellees to divide 15 minutes of time. The bailiff has informed me that you have agreed to divide and structure your arguments as follows. Ms. Silkey will proceed first for 8 minutes.
Hazing, Your Honor.
Hazing, thank you. We'll then proceed for the remaining time, or at least try to perhaps save a little bit of rebuttal time. And then on the other side, Ms. Gross will proceed first, and then for 7.5 minutes, and then Mr. Detlefson will proceed second for the remaining 7.5 minutes. Everyone's with that structure in place. Ms. Silkey, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Vanessa Silk with Baird Holm Law Firm. I represent appellants Central Platte NRD, Cozad Ditch Company, Loop Power, and Lower Loop NRD. I plan to take 8.5 minutes of oral argument time, and North Platte NRD's counsel will take 6.5. Of that time, we reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. We ask this court to reverse and vacate the order below. Appellants have standing to object, because this interbasin transfer would deplete 150 CFS of water out of an over-appropriated reach of the Platte River, on which the appellants rely. Appellants objected and plausibly alleged that the depletion would injure them. Still, the department failed to accept appellants' well-pled claims and improperly dismissed the appellants and all other objectors on the issue of standing. The department tries to back away from the plausibility standard of review and its own regulations and parlay a novel, illusory excess flow condition into an objector-free application. Both positions are contrary to law. Appellants have standing under both this court's case law and the department's own regulations. First, appellants have common law standing under Hagen and Ponderosa Ridge, because the depletion would imminently injure their water use interests. The order does not even meaningfully address Hagen or Ponderosa Ridge and cannot be reconciled with that governing precedent. Second, appellants have standing under the 2011 Niobrara case because this interbasin transfer would trigger statutory duties requiring the appellants to spend public funds.
Don't they already have those statutory duties?
Correct, Your Honor. However, unlike the 2013 case and prior cases where the issue at hand was whether or not an application might trigger those rights and duties under the statute, with the over-appropriated and fully appropriated status, the appellants, particularly Central Platte Natural Resources District, have an ongoing duty to use every drop of water within the basin, within their jurisdiction, to reduce depletions to stream flow to pre-1997 levels. That's what distinguishes this from the 2013 Niobrara case.
The department's order, the director's order, seems to rest in large part upon the condition that was premised in the amended application as well as the original application, essentially waiving adjudication as to past and future appropriations. Is that, I don't see any allegation that that was an unlawful condition. Are you arguing that it was an unlawful condition?
The condition is illusory, and it's based on a presumption that the department will actually accept it. The department does implement and apply conditions on a number of different water rights permits, but without our participation as parties, as objectors in a contested case hearing, there's no basis for us to expect that this condition will be adopted, and we also allege that if it is, it doesn't protect us from harm. Specifically, excess flow to date, excess flows have only ever been used by appellants and by other stakeholders within the Platte Basin for the purpose of fulfilling their duties under the Groundwater Management and Protection Act and the program.
The excess flows have to be requested and approved by the DNR, is that correct?
In part. Appellant Central Platte Natural Resources District has permanent rights for excess flows, but again, those are conditioned on the department's determination of the availability of water. We've never before had water that was deemed to be excess flows leave the basin for any other purpose, and most importantly here, we don't...
You're not suggesting that there's never been an instance where there's been more stream flow at those downstream gauges than the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service requires or the other plans contemplate. There have been at times, haven't there?
Not pursuant to someone's appropriation right, and that's an important distinction to make. Yes, when there are flows in excess of state-protected flows, those will show up on stream gauges downstream.
And then they just go on.
Assuming they're not utilized by my clients within their portion and jurisdiction of the over-appropriated reach and fully appropriated reach within the basin. That's the purpose for excess flow use within the basin, and that's why we have to participate as party objectors to ensure that this application is analyzed and that any conditions on this application that are ultimately adopted by the department do actually protect our in-basin rights that are dictated and authorized by the Groundwater Management and Protection Act.
You've made, as I understood your argument, you've made two arguments with respect to what I refer to as that special condition in the application. One is that the department might just not do it. That, I think, perhaps is, you know, just saying, well, they might snicker us. On the other hand, you're saying even if they do include that condition,
we are harmed.
You're harmed, but I'm not sure I yet understand how that harm occurs.
The harm occurs because excess flows are not defined anywhere in department regulations or in the statutes. They're loosely referred to in planning documents that our friends in the AG's office briefed. However, to date, those flows, when they're available, have only ever been granted by way of an appropriation to stakeholders within the Platte River Basin for the purpose of projects like recharge and retiming flows to the river to meet the requirements by statute for the over-appropriated designation and the program documents.
Would your over-appropriation be senior to this interbasin transfers, is that correct?
Not necessarily, and that is why we must participate.
The condition doesn't say that?
The condition says that it'll always be junior
to future. Current and future, correct?
But the department also states in their brief that all current rights are subject to their discretion to determine the availability and the priority for various projects, whether it's in the basin or now out of the basin. That's what makes this so different and so important for us to participate under our individual authorities.
So the requirement that you seek DNR approval for the excess flows, you're concerned that they'll deny those requests and then transfer the excess flows to the other basin?
Yes, in part. And that's why a blanket statement that it'll always be junior doesn't address the likelihood of harm and the harm that we alleged in our objections, and further, there has been no hydrologic analysis or critical analysis of this application. Our friends in the AG's office point to the record that was made below. That record, aside from the application and the objections, predates the application by at least 8 years or more. There's been no analysis, no discovery, no meaningful analysis of this application, and we know that we'll be harmed based off of the plain language of that application. We also meet the standard for standing under the department's own regulations. And that's another thing that distinguishes this case from prior cases where the court did not address Section 7.001.07, it specifically confers standing more broadly than the common law, because appellants could be adversely affected because they rely on this. Again, we know we're affected, but under the regulations, it's broader.
Under your articulation, isn't the regulation, the way you interpret it, broader than the statute?
It interprets the statute specifically, and the department has the authority to adopt rules and regulations to interpret the statutory language granted to them. What the department's asking, though, is for you all to read standing entirely out of their own regulations and the statutes themselves. We also meet the common law standing standards set forth in Hagen and Ponderosa Ridge and Niagara in the 2011 case. With that, I want to be mindful of Mr. Hazing's time, unless there are other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Adam Hazing. I represent the North Platte Natural Resources District. As you can tell, I have paralyzed vocal cords. I speak softer than normal. If I need to repeat myself, please don't be bashful, as I know you often are not. I want to talk about three issues today. One, under Hagen and Ponderosa Ridge, there is case law that says a user of a direct, unprotected water resource has standing to challenge a competitor's application for that same resource. Neither of those cases were overruled either by Bill Nyberg 2, which is 2013, or by the CNPPID.
Aren't those cases groundwater cases?
Your Honor, here's why I don't think it makes a difference.
Is that a yes?
Yes, they are.
All right, now go ahead.
Central CNPPID versus North Platte was both. It's a distinction without a difference. Hagen was a groundwater case, you're correct. Bill Nyberg 2, that was a surface water and a groundwater case. It was an objection to surface water because of groundwater. Bill Nyberg 1 was the same. It was a groundwater case specifically associated with regulation of pumping. Ponderosa was a groundwater case. We have commingled the analysis of all those cases just as much as we've commingled the regulation and usage of groundwater and surface water in Nebraska. So if we go back to that, we have facts directly on point with Hagen and Ponderosa. We have, since 2010, used excess flows unprotected without an appropriation with DNR approval for induced groundwater recharge. We've done that to meet our IMP obligations, and we will continue to do that. That has been our primary tool in meeting those obligations. Nothing in the case law has overruled that unprotected direct competing use. We've alleged that in this case.
So are those rights that would be senior to this transfer?
That's where it becomes a little bit dubious, Your Honor. The application says we're going to be junior to all other appropriators. We're not even an appropriator. We are an unprotected user. In order to become a subsequent user, we would have to show excess flows unappropriated. This application directly conflicts with that right in the future. Secondly, we do have integrated management obligations, and we do carry those, and we carry those out because they're required by statute. Those statutes will require that we track this depletion, that we offset it, and that we monitor it. Middle Niagara 1 said that integrated management obligations provide standing. I don't see how you can say integrated management obligations provide standing, but some integrated management obligations don't. Either they do or they don't. And we know that this one will. Third, I want to touch again, just as Ms. Silk did, on the department's regulations, but in a little bit different manner. The regulations provide that an interested party is one that has an interest subject to the application of a statute different than the public at large. The statute in this case is 46-289, and there's four different subsections that clearly relate to the North Platte NRD. It clearly fits within the language of the regulation found nowhere in the case law. And I'll reserve that time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Very well. Ms. Gross, you may approach and proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Brenna Gross. With me is my co-counsel, Paul Peter, of the Keating O'Gara Law Firm, on behalf of the applicant in this matter, whom I will refer to as PRD. This is a case where an applicant is requesting to put to beneficial use unappropriated excess flows and to stand at the back of the line before doing so. The application here is premised upon the express condition that PRD cannot divert any excess flows out of the basin until all appropriations in the basin are satisfied.
Your opposing counsel suggests that the department in some fashion would not be bound by that condition requested in your application, amended application. Do you agree with that argument, and are you here today to affirmatively say it's part of it and will be forever?
Your Honor, I would say that the requested condition is a critical part of the entire application, and without it, the application would be insufficient. So this is an interbasin transfer which requires additional elements to be shown, including beneficial impact or harms that it may cause under 46289. So without that, well, the analysis of my client is premised upon the existence of that express condition. If that express condition is removed, then the analysis for the department to make this public interest analysis determination under 46289 would be insufficient. So I would say that our application, because it's premised upon this express condition, it's part and parcel of the application.
Thank you.
I guess just to follow up on that, are you saying that express condition can never be removed in the future?
So the way that the excess flow permits would work, so if you look at exhibits 19 and 20 in the record, there are two examples of this, and it shows in the permit, here are requested conditions. And so what we're requesting is that this express requested condition is included in that permit and would be part of the water right that we are granted. So it would remain in that permit indefinitely.
Can permits be modified after they're granted?
Your Honor, that might be a better question for the department. I'm operating under the assumption that this permit is not going to be modified. What we're requesting, what was noticed to the public, and what the objectors are objecting to is not a future application or a future permit that's been modified, but it's the application itself here. To touch on excess flows, they exist when supply exceeds demand. They're not constant. If they do exist, they're usually temporary in nature and vary in volume. So these facts combined, PRD's application does what it's intended to do. It avoids harm to others and puts to beneficial use water that otherwise would flow away. Now I want to touch on the regulations regarding which standard applies for standing purposes. And then I also want to address the Hagen and Ponderosa Ridge argument that was brought by both of the other parties. I'll begin with the regulations. The appellants and cross-appellant claim that the standing bar should be lower than what the common law requires, primarily by isolating the phrase is or could be in the department's regulations under the definition of an interested person. But words in the definitions in the regulations cannot be read in isolation. They must be read as a whole and construed in a consistent and sensible way. For one, the full definition of interested person contains common law standing terminology throughout, like specific legally protectable interest, and the phrase adversely affected in a legally cognizable way by the outcome of a proceeding. Second, rather than this definition supplanting the common law standing requirements, the full phrase, is or could be adversely affected in a legally cognizable way by the outcome of a proceeding, is parallel, consistent, and analogous to other phrases in common law standing requirements, like actual or imminent injury in fact, and that the injury must be fairly traced to the challenged action, and that it is likely to be redressed by a favorable decision. One cannot be affected in a legally cognizable way based on speculation. And third, and critically, this definition of an interested person must be read alongside the regulation's separate definition of a party, which is what objectors are classified as here. Like the interested person definition, the definition of a party has two separate parts, an interested person and someone who is recognized by the department as having standing in a contested case. The definition does not state that an interested person has standing, period. Rather, it recognizes that standing is an additional and separate requirement from the requirement of being an interested person. In addition to the regulations, no statute lowers the common law standing requirements here, and this touches on Justice Castle's question earlier. The court has found that textual hooks in statutes, like those found in the department's regulations, implicate common law standing requirements. For example, this court in MUD rejected the argument that the term interest in interested parties in 46233, which applies to applications for the appropriation of water, was broader than common law standing. It concluded that the statute does not supplant the common law standing bar. This court also found in Central that the term aggrieved party in 46750 and under the APA should be addressed under common law standing requirements. Now I want to touch on Hagen and Ponderosa Ridge and the argument that these cases are controlling here. They simply do not apply, and as the court alluded to earlier, these are groundwater cases, not surface water cases. This matters because excess surface water flows are different. They are not like a pool of groundwater that declines as water is withdrawn, like the court described in Hagen. They are use it or lose it flows. Unlike groundwater, which any unused water would remain relatively static for later use, excess flows are either put to beneficial use or they flow away. Now this year is a good example. The state experienced high flow events where basin appropriators, like the appellants, were able to use the water they needed, and there was still water left over that simply flowed away instead of being put to beneficial use as the application here is requesting to do.
They suggest that they use some of that excess flow for recharging. Would that be lost if this excess flow were transferred to another basin?
So a few points to that, Judge. So first, here we have the requested condition that says we're going to be at the back of the line, so anybody else in the basin who needs the water can use it first. Second, under the IMPs, using excess flows to offset depletions to stream flow is one available option among many, but there's no right to do so. So if you look at CPNRDs and NPNRDs, IMPs in the record under Exhibits 10 and 11, you'll see a variety of different management options that they can employ, but nothing requires them to use excess flows. And if they do want to do that, they still must get the department's blessing to do so through a permit. So there's no inherent right to this water under the IMPs, and if they do want to use it, they must receive the department's blessing, and we have the requested condition here that our permit would be in the back of the line of all of those other uses in the basin.
They suggest there's some statutory obligation to take this excess water to recharge. Is there a statutory obligation?
So it's my understanding that the statute, because the basin is designated as over-appropriated, they're required to implement these IMPs. It's been designated that way since 2004. Now, there's nothing in that statute that says you must use these excess flows for recharge. It says, here are some action items. Essentially, the IMPs say, here are the action items that we can take. And one of them is using excess flows, but there's a variety of other options that they can take. And out of respect for the department's time, I would yield the remainder of the appellee's time to the department and urge this court to affirm the department's order.
Thank you.
Please the court. My name is Joshua Deathlifson from the Nebraska Attorney General's Office. I'm here today with co-counsel Justin Levine, and we're appearing on behalf of the Appalachian Department of Natural Resources. I'd like to start by emphasizing again sort of the context here, because I think it informs the entire standing analysis. So in the Platte River Basin, we have three categories of water. We have target flows that are mandated by PRIP. We We have the state protected flows, which are permanent surface water appropriations previously granted by the department. And then we have excess flows. These excess flows are additional unappropriated water that may or may not be present in the stream at any given time, depending on factors such as time of year or demand in the basin. If the excess flows are not used when they are available under a department permit, they simply flow away, ultimately to the Missouri River and to the Gulf of Mexico. So the excess flow permits are the way that the department can ensure that water can be used when it's available, when the supply exceeds the target flows and state protected flows. So if we think conceptually about these excess flow permits as sort of being at the back of the line, you can think of PRD's request here as sort of requesting to be at the back of the back. They are, in effect, seeking to take water that would ultimately be lost to the Missouri and direct that water instead to the Republican River for compact compliance purposes. So given this context, appellants have not established standing to object to PRD's application. The department correctly dismissed the objectors, and we would ask this court to affirm that order.
Opposing counsel seems to be concerned about excess flow permits or requests being denied by the DNR in an effort to transfer this water to another basin. Is that a legitimate concern? Is that speculative?
It's entirely speculative, Your Honor, and there are a couple things I would say there. The first is that should they be denied we're talking about an actual flow coming down, they think they're entitled to. Should they be denied?
Excess flow.
Correct. They would have separate recourse to challenge the department's order on that. So that wouldn't necessarily be attributable to PRD's permit itself. That would be a separate matter. The other piece is that to the extent that the NRDs are sort of representing that they have the obligation to use these for PRIP obligations. I mean, PRIP is a state obligation. DNR is a party to these IMPs with the NRDs. So I think the idea that they alone have an interest in doing this is also sort of backstops the speculation in that regard. So there are a couple pieces of appellant's argument that I would like to aim at. The first is that PRD's proposed permit can't affect any other water appropriators. So an excess flow permit, by its very nature, generally doesn't affect other appropriators. Again, they are in excess of the state-protected interest. So any state-protected interest, such as the appellant's in-stream flow rights here, are protected by sort of definition before we get to these excess flows. And again, with regard to the other excess flow holders, PRD's requested condition would prevent any harm to them as well.
So we've got some acknowledgement from the council that there will not be a change in this application. That condition will not be removed. It's part of the process, part and parcel. Does the DNR have the ability to strike this condition in approving the application?
No, Your Honor. So I guess I'll take that in two parts. One, as they're looking at this application now, as the co-applicant sort of indicated, this application is predicated entirely upon this condition being part of it. So this isn't a situation where they have a request for a surface water appropriation, sort of an independent condition that may or may not be granted. Really, with regard to the 46233 information and 46289 interbasin transfer information that's required, the application would be, I think, woefully insufficient without this condition. So should the department determine, once they get to the merit stage, that condition wouldn't be warranted, PRD would have to refile their application with full information. That would be re-noticed, and there would be another opportunity to object. So that's prior to the application being granted. Should the application be granted, and again, I'd like to stress that there is still a merit space to this. It's not presumed at this point. Should it be granted, if that condition were ever going to be changed, that would have to be re-noticed. There would have to be a separate process for that as well, because that becomes part of the inherent, you know, kind of the property right associated with the permit at that point. There has to be process for that condition to eventually be removed.
Once the permit is granted, assuming it would be granted by the DNR, can it be modified?
Only using that same process.
Notice given again, new hearing, new right to object.
That's
whole process starts over.
Yes.
Would there be any questions that the appellants would be interested parties at that time?
Well, I think there are the arguments that we've made, essentially, that, I mean, there are several pieces to it. That excess flow permits are themselves contingent in nature and don't rise to the level of legally protectable interest because they would rely upon a chain of attenuation before they could be harmed. But so I don't want to concede that they absolutely would be. I think they would potentially have a better opportunity or at least wouldn't have to contend with that condition. The other piece that I want to make sure to address here that the appellants have raised is that this would somehow harm their IMP obligations. And there are a couple of responses to this. First is an IMP is a planning document. It lays out their goals and then a suite of options that they can use across the 10-year increment to meet those goals. But as the 2017 FCID case recognized, it does not itself take or require any specific action, but rather outlines, again, these tools that they can use. So the IMP itself cannot be the basis for harm as a planning document. Now, the IMP obligations that they're under are already in place by virtue of the over-appropriated status of the river. And granting an excess flow permit does not change or increase any of those obligations, nor would the permit itself require them to spend any public funds. So they're trying to make use of the Middle Niobrara 1 sort of idea that by statutory mandate something would follow immediately thereon, and therefore there would be no speculation. That's simply not the case here. They're already under these obligations. They seem to claim that they have a right to every drop of water in the stream to offset depletions to stream flow, which is one of their IMP obligations. But that's simply not the case. The IMPs don't grant them that right, and neither does the Groundwater Management Protection Act. Again, to the extent they want to use excess flows as one of the tools within their IMP, they have to make a separate determination and have a department permit to do so. And should they do that, PRD's requested condition would protect that use as a basin use of excess water before that they would take. The other piece of kind of the IMP claims is that PRD's permit would somehow represent a new use or a depletion that would have to be offset by the NRD. That, again, I think is a misunderstanding of the scheme here. So under PRIP, a new use that has to be offset is one that affects target flows or state-protected flows. So when the over-appropriated status went in, there was a moratorium on new uses. If we're going to have a new use that would affect one of those two categories of water, that does have to be offset in time and location. But again, here, we're talking about excess water that doesn't affect either of those things. The NRDs are also under an obligation to, again, reduce depletions to stream flow to offset previous groundwater development. But an excess flow permit is a surface water permit that doesn't implicate that obligation separately. So I see I'm out of time, and I apologize. If there are no further questions, we would ask you to affirm the department's order.
Thank you. How much time did we go over the 15 minutes?
32 seconds, Your Honor.
We'll add the 32 seconds to the remaining rebuttal time of the appellants and cross-appellant, and that yields a total of how much?
2 minutes and 11 seconds.
2 minutes and 11 seconds. Ms. Silk, are you providing the rebuttal argument?
If it works for you, Your Honor, I would use about 40 seconds of it and have my co-counsel utilize it.
If that's the way you want it, we're happy to accomplish.
We'll make it work either way.
But it's up to you to keep track of the time.
Yes.
Okay.
Eyes on the time. So, one, there's no speculation here. None whatsoever. We are already in an over-appropriated and fully appropriated status. And under 46.715 and the Groundwater Management and Protection Act, the NRD appellants have independent authorities that are not held by the department to meet the pre-1997 depletions to stream flow. When the Attorney General's office says that it's not really the same thing with excess flows versus groundwater pumping, it's confusing because the whole point of integrated management plans and conjunctive water management in Nebraska recognizes that these waters are hydrologically connected. And we don't have the right to assert that every ounce, every drop of excess flows within the river, but we have the right to seek those. And we asserted in our objections that it's not just the IMPs that are harmed, it's our implementation of controls. And as the applicant's counsel notes, they said that we have, you know, a range of other options that are different from just asserting rights to excess flows. Those other options are to levy taxes and shut down more groundwater pumping. That's exactly the issues that were in play in the 2011 Niobrara case and the reason why the court held that NRDs must have standing to participate in whether or not that application should be granted. And so with that, I'll respect co-counsel's time unless there's more questions. Thank you.
Mr. Hazing, you have 38 seconds.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. Three issues. They point to exhibits 19 and 20 as creating this condition. That's interesting to me because the application doesn't really say that. The application just says, we want something akin to exhibit 19. I don't know what that means. Since the application was filed, it's only been in briefs that we've seen that extrapolated. Second, they've argued Hagen and Ponderosa don't apply. They do apply, and they say, because it's excess flows and they're either used or they go away. Well, that presumes they're used, and they're going to get used by someone. We use them, and we want to continue to use them. Thank you.
Thank you. Your time has expired, and the cause is submitted. We're adjourned for the day. Thank you.